98.7 FM, Arizona's sports station. Burns and Gambo starts now.
Straight up, 2 o'clock on this Friday in Phoenix. John Gambadoro and Steve Zinsmeister filling in as we wrap up an entire month that me and Burnsy did not do a show together. But Monday, come Monday, the band gets back together. The band will get back together. So we will we'll all be together doing the show. As I said, we do it a little differently than the other shows. We like to make sure one of us is always here. So if I'm out, Burnsy's in. If Burnsy's out, I'm in. We've done that ever since we started doing the show together, and we always make sure we do it that way. Maybe one day it won't work, but that kind of works for us. So we got a big show in store for you. We're going to take you up till 6 o'clock. We got some good guests coming on the program. We'll talk a lot about Kyler Murray. But the big story of the day, we'll talk about that next right here on 98.7.
Burns and Gambo, the weigh-in, brought to you by Revitalize Weight Loss.
I do want to say, because we're going to get to the Kyler Murray sound. Press conference today, Kyler Murray, Steve Keim. We'll get to all of that. We'll play all the sound field. We'll let you hear what Kyler had to say and what Steve Keim had to say. I took this photo. I was driving behind a car today, and the license plate was K1 Baby.
K1 Baby?
It was a Cardinals license plate. It said K1 Baby.
Do you think that they named their child Kyler?
I was driving behind it. It looks like it's a BMW, and it says K1 Baby. And
I'm like, they have a K1 Baby? Yeah. Or they're like, K1 Baby!
Just K1 Baby. It's like, I think Kyler 1 Baby. So
like they're cheering for
drive
Kyler.
It. So, you know, you got to get close enough. So you're trying to drive close enough to get it and take the picture at the same time. So, like, look, I'm driving behind the car. It says K1 Baby.
But they're happy that he's going to stay in the Valley until 2028, or else they'd have to get a new license plate.
Right, exactly. Yeah, you don't have to change a license plate. I don't know if that's expensive enough. You don't have to change it out. All right, we easily could start with the Kyler Murray press conference. We easily could start with the things that Kyler and Steve Keim had to say. We're going to get to that. We're going to do a lot of that. But the top story of the day is going to be about your Phoenix Suns. What I'm hearing is that there are forces in play that are discussing the potential of putting four teams together that could satisfy the needs of everyone to make a deal work that could bring Kevin Durant to the Phoenix Suns. Initial stages, very complex, very hard to do because the math has to work. But sometimes getting four teams involved can make it easier to do because it can satisfy everyone's needs. If you've hit a roadblock on a potential deal, the Nets and the Suns have talked, you've hit some roadblocks, it's really hard to do it. To alleviate those issues, you bring in another team. If you can't get it, you bring in another team. It makes it extremely difficult to do. But I do know that there are some internal discussions going on. I don't know how far it's gotten. I don't know if the teams have discussed this, but internal discussions to where, okay, can we get these four teams involved in a trade? The Nets, the Knicks, the Suns, and the Jazz. The Knicks would be appeased by getting Donovan Mitchell. The Suns would get Kevin Durant. And then I imagine the Nets and the Jazz would get, you know, a bunch of picks and younger players and things like that. But that might be the way to look. The Suns and the Nets are stalled, okay? They're stalled. It's not dead, but it's stalled because the Nets have a high asking price and the Suns can't meet that asking price. They don't want to give up everything, including draft picks and four or five players, to get Kevin Durant and gut their team. So now what if you could bring in other teams, and now all of a sudden you might be able to say, okay, if we're going to give up those players and picks, well, maybe we can get more than Kevin Durant back. Maybe we can add two or three players that aren't going to be veteran minimums off the street that aren't as good. We could add some players into the mix that kind of make sense for us to replace the players that we're losing. That could be the win-win that eventually gets a deal done.
Because I know that you reported at one point the Suns were wary of gutting the team, of losing Mikal.
Still are.
Losing Mikal, losing Cam Johnson, losing Jay Crowder, Saric, Campaign. I mean, if you give them all away and get Durant, that's fine. You got a heck of a top four players, but then you don't have the depth that made you such a good team in the regular season last year. You lose some of that team chemistry and the camaraderie. And if it's just a bunch of veteran minimum guys, I don't know who's still out there. I haven't really evaluated that too much, but I like the idea of maybe like a, you get a shooter out of it or a guy who's pretty good defensively and you get a couple of role players. If that's still a possibility, I'd be down for that.
Yeah, listen, I don't think the Phoenix Suns want to give up Cam Johnson, Mikal Bridges, two or three other players and all those picks and just get back KD. But if they got back other players, if they were able to get back two or three other players that are good players, right, decent players, you know, now all of a sudden you could justify that a lot more. Look, Brooklyn wants more than picks if they give up Durant, okay? They don't want just picks. They want to try to win with Kyrie Irving and with Ben Simmons, so they want some players back too. Now, I know there's some stuff out there about five teams. I have not heard about five teams being discussed, but just four. I'm not real optimistic it will happen, but I do know that there are discussions because, you know, there's been a roadblock for sure. Kevin Durant hasn't been traded yet, and to alleviate those issues, you start adding other teams, and you start to figure out, okay, if we had this team, what could they bring to the table? If I bring another team in, what could they add to the table? And all of a sudden, you might be able to make a complex deal work. But again, hard to do because the math has to work. And you've got to satisfy four different teams' wants and needs to make it happen. But I do think that, you know, that this, if it's going to get done, what I'm being led to believe is that this is the way it would have to get done.
And usually when a superstar gets traded, there's that one team in the multi-team deal that kind of just takes on the bulk. You know what I mean? They get
but
a ton of picks.
But there's two stars now that make it a lot easier to bring in other teams. Donovan Mitchell,
right.
The Knicks wanting Donovan Mitchell makes this a lot more attractive if you're the Phoenix Suns. Oh, okay. The Knicks, how badly do the Knicks want Donovan Mitchell? What are the Knicks, because now you could take stuff that the Knicks are giving up. Take Obi Toppin. Okay, the Knicks want Donovan Mitchell. They're going to give up picks and they're going to give up some players. They'll give up Obi Toppin. He was a first round pick a couple of years ago. Like, you know, a team could get him in a deal. Maybe the Jazz to get off of Mitchell and to get all these picks would be willing to give up a Beasley or a Bogdanovich. So you just have to look at what these other teams may put into the package and say, okay, is that attractive to the Nets? Is that attractive to the Suns? What would the Knicks give up and what would the Jazz give up to make that deal work besides picks and players? And then you start to put it all together. Again, math is difficult, complex to do, but when you want to get a deal done, sometimes the best way to do it is to add more teams on so that way you could satisfy the needs of everyone.
So do you still get the sense that there's no chance or a slim chance that the Suns would be able to move off of Mikal, would want to move off of Mikal and Cam at the same time? Cam Johnson, I mean.
I think the Suns are very willing to explore this because they do want to get Kevin Durant. But if I told you the Knicks are going to have to give up Cam Johnson and Mikal Bridges and picks to get Kevin Durant. Oh man, okay. Like I get it. Kevin Durant's great, but man, you're gutting the team and you're going to have to give up players to make it work. Maybe a Dario Saric, a Jay Crowder, because you got to make the numbers work. They're going to get more than Kevin Durant back. They're going to get back these three players in the deal that are decent players. They're decent players. So you could look at the roster of the other teams, the Nets, the Jazz, the Knicks, and say, who could you get in that deal that's going to be better than trying to replace Cam, Mikal, Dario, Jay, and whoever's in the deal with some street free agent on a veteran's minimum contract? It becomes a little bit more attractive because now you might be able to justify it by getting back a player that's better than what you would have been trying to get as a street free agent.
Yes, it does sound more enticing to me as long as the price, the outgoing price, does not increase because of it. Like, I'm not willing to throw in another first-round pick if I'm already giving up five or six or whatever.
You only give up four.
Okay, let's say you're giving up four. I'm not looking to increase that price just to get a Bogdanovich or just to get a Cam Thomas. I'm just throwing out names at this point.
Yeah, remember, you don't have to increase. Like, you could do pick swaps with somebody, but you're limited to just the four first-round picks. So,
right.
You know, but if you throw another team in there, maybe there could be extra picks that are added from somebody else. Maybe you get to five teams. I haven't heard five. I have not heard five. But I am looking at the possibility of a four-team trade and seeing if that is what could finally move the needle here a little bit to try to get something done.
Could you imagine the complex conversations that have to happen? I mean, you're talking four different organizations.
Yes.
You're talking big-name people involved in this.
Yep.
A lot of big personalities in the room. Just get getting everyone together, like communication wise, because I remember the incident that we talked about with Memphis, where they thought the Suns thought they were getting one Brooks and they were getting another Brooks,
yeah,
and then
Dylan
they canceled
Brooks
it.
And Marshawn Brooks. I was right in the middle of that. I was breaking that trade, and I was going at it with Wojnarowski, because he was saying it was one player and I was saying it was another player,
right?
And then I double checked and I'm like, yeah, I'm telling you, the Suns they think it's Dylan Brooks,
and that was just a communication error.
Yes,
I mean that's not even a negotiation error. So imagine how hard it must be to get the four of the bigger organizations in basketball to agree to these kinds of things.
I think if something's going to get done, this is the direction it would go. So I think if something's going to happen with KD, this is the direction it would likely go. We'll talk more about this later on in the show. Kyler Murray at his press conference today had a lot of interesting things to say. We'll go over some of them next right here on 98.7 FM, Arizona's sports station.
98.7 FM, Arizona's sports station. Burns and Gambo.
I personally feel like this is just a start. I feel like the past 3 years we've been able to do, a lot of great things. All we've done is go up. I've done a lot of great individual things, but again, for me, the goal is to win championships, and I feel like I said, this is the start. I mean, I think with a lot of the reps and experiences that I've been able to go through these past 3 years will help me help bring along all the rest of my guys, and I think as a collective, we'll only be better from here on out.
That's Kyler Murray, his press conference today announcing the new contract, 5 years, $230.5 million. He becomes the second highest paid quarterback in average per year at $46.1 million behind Aaron Rodgers, but ahead of Deshaun Watson and Patrick Holmes. His annual salary from 2022 to 2028 is $38 million per year. But he is now, on average, one of the highest paid quarterbacks in the entire National Football League. A couple of things that he said that was asked during the press conference was, there a point where he thought he would not be an Arizona Cardinal?
Never. No, this is where I want to be. I made that clear. More so the bad days, I'm talking about just the negativity of taking the heat, throughout social media and all that stuff, which, I give him a little crap for, because he put a lot of it on me. Y'all know, I'm a quiet dude when it comes to social media and stuff like that. So just to be able to, sit there and, take all the shots and stuff like that, it is what it is. But I understood, this is part of the business. Obviously, I let them take care of what they need to take care of. I just, I love the game of football, and that's my goal is, like I said, to win championships.
With that, you go back to the timeline, Steve, right? Okay. A lot of the crap he put on me, and now he's talking about his agent, Eric Burkhardt, and the scrubbing, which was, orchestrated, the scrubbing of the Instagram account, and then the letter from Eric Burkhardt in all caps. That is stuff that he put on Kyler, and Kyler kind of took, he said, I had to take a little bit of heat on that, but in the end, his contract got worked out. But look, social media can ruin your life if you let it. It can ruin your life. Guys use it sometimes to their advantage and sometimes to their disadvantage. There's no question that they tried to use social media to shake things up with the Arizona Cardinals and try to get Michael Bidwell to notice that, hey, we want a massive contract extension.
Well, and Kyler's been the subject of social media discussion for his entire life. I mean, since early high school days, since he was like 13. So that wasn't really an issue. I didn't think he would be affected by it. But it did actually confirm something that I was curious about, which is how he felt about the strategy that they went with. The strategy early in the offseason was to scrub the Instagram, to release the all caps letter. And so even in a joking way where he admits, I kind of give Eric some of the credit for putting me in that situation, I always kind of wondered, because that was not Kyler's style. And knowing what we all know about Kyler, he was not the loud, public, complaining kind of guy, but that's how the agent decided to handle it earlier. So
right.
I think it was a nice little nod to Eric Burkhardt, like, hey, I know we did it in an unconventional way, but in the end, everybody got what they wanted.
Kyler wants to be direct with loyal Arizona Cardinal fans and the great community of the Valley, and stating his two very important goals and objectives. One, he absolutely wants to be your long-term quarterback, and two, he desperately wants to win the Super Bowl. Okay, those things are true. I mean, Kyler was loyal to the Arizona Cardinals. And not at one time did we ever see hear him say, I want to trade, I want out, I don't want to be here? Every indication we got, whether it was the agent's letter or anything from Kyler, was that he wanted to be here. There was never a time where I thought Kyler doesn't want to sign an extension with the Cardinals. He wants to get out of here as soon as he can. I never thought, now with DeAndre Ayton, yeah, I thought that DeAndre would have liked to have gotten out of here. I did not think that way about Kyler Murray. I've thought all along that Kyler wanted to be here. He just kind of wanted to make sure that he got paid accordingly. All right, some of the other cuts. Kyler Murray says that this is just a start for the Arizona Cardinals.
I personally feel like this is just a start. You know, I feel like, you know, the past 3 years we've been able to do, you know, a lot of great things. All we've done is go up. I've done a lot of great individual things. But, again, for me, the goal is to win championships. And I feel like I said, this is the start. I mean, I think with a lot of the reps and experiences that I've been able to go through these past 3 years will help me help bring along all the, you know, the rest of my guys. And, you know, I think as a collective, you know, we'll only be better from here on out.
It needs to be, right? That's one of the things we talked about yesterday, the leadership and how important is the leadership. That's what we're going to look at, you know, with Kyler. You know, a guy's going to rally around him. Is he going to help establish the culture of the Arizona Cardinals? It's a lot to live up to with the expectations of that contract, but is he doing everything he can in the offseason, in the locker room, to be the leader that they're going to demand of him when they just gave him that massive contract?
Yeah, and even Colt McCoy, backup quarterback in the back of the room, kind of cracked a joke at the end, like, hey, the quarterbacks just want to know, are you going to be at walkthrough tomorrow? And he joked, and he said, yeah, I'll be there. And he said he's excited to be in the locker room with the guys that he loves. And I think that's really all the fan base really wanted to hear, is that they're all going to get along and everything's going to be hunky-dory here going into the season, because training camp is so close.
Yeah. Listen, I mean, you'll go through ups and downs, highs and lows. Every quarterback does. Talked about focusing on getting better, not the negotiations, which was interesting.
My focus is on getting better, and I think we, you know, we've had a lot of discussions on how we do that. Obviously, working hard on, you know, off the field or you know, out of the building, but that's my focus. You know, I wasn't really too worried about the negotiations or, you know, what they discuss behind closed doors. Anybody close to me, you know, will tell you, you know,
that stuff. Look, the money's important. It is, obviously. He's going to be able to take care of his family for the rest of his life. I mean, there's a pride thing in getting paid the way you feel like you should be paid, according to your peers. DeAndre Ayton wanted a max contract because that's what Luka Doncic got and Trae Young got and other players were getting. And he wanted to make sure that he got a max contract, too, so he could say, I'm a max player as well. So I think with Kyler, I do, you know, listen, he was 42-0 as a high school quarterback. He won a Heisman Trophy in college and, you know, played in the college football playoffs. This kid has played in front of the biggest stages at the highest levels. And there's no doubt he loves the game. I do, you know, listen, money's always a factor. I'm not going to say it's not, but I do believe that part about him. And the most important thing to him is winning football games.
Well, some guys in negotiations, we know this to be true of athletes in all sports, some guys take a particular interest in negotiating their contracts. They want to be a part of...
Lamar Jackson.
Right. They want to be a part of what are the numbers, how many years, what are the benefits to me, roster bonuses, all these things. And then there are some other guys who are like, you know what, I'm just going to tell my agent, get a deal done. I want to be a Cardinal. Just make that happen, and the money will... work itself out. Get me what you can, but now, I just want to be here.
Listen, but an agent has to get you what you're worth or more, or he's not going to have any clients. So, if if Eric Burkhardt came back, yep, we got Kyler Murray, $30 million a year. Nobody's signing with Eric Burkhardt ever again. You got him less than all of those other quarterbacks? Like, come on. So that's another thing. Like, I don't think, you know, so the agent has a response. That's why you hire an agent. His responsibility is to get you the money. He's the guy that's got to be the horse's ass. Okay?
Right.
He's the one that's got to take it on the chin. He's the one that's got to take all the punches, and take all the brunt of the criticism, because that's what he's getting paid for. Okay? It's going to be on him. He's the bad guy. Kyle's not the bad guy. He's the bad guy. That's what all agents have to be. You got to be the bad guy. But in the end, you got to get your client as much money as you can. And if you don't, you're not going to have many clients. Nobody's going to want to sign with you when you're getting your client less value than what you should be getting them. Is the asking price for Kevin Durant too high? We'll talk about that next on 98.7 FM, Arizona Sports Station.
The Burns and Gambo Need to Know Twitter poll, presented by Sanderson Ford.
All right, Sanderson Ford, 51st Avenue in Glendale, online at sandersonford.com. You need to purchase your Mustang Mach-E or your Ford F-150, truck or your Explorer. Great selection. Inventory arriving daily at Sanderson Ford. They've got our poll question. Eric Ruby, I don't even know what it is today, but I'm going to take a look now.
Before we get into the KD stuff, we're going to stick with some Kyler Murray conversation since he spoke today. And lucky us, it's no longer time to talk about if Kyler Murray's going to be playing this season or be a Cardinal. But now we get to ask about what he's going to do. Which of these receivers will have the most targets by the end of the season?
Most targets, okay.
Four options are Zach Ertz, his buddy Hollywood Brown, DeAndre Hopkins, and a double option, Rondale Moore / A.J. Green. This includes the playoffs, if they do make it.
I'm going to eliminate DeAndre Hopkins just because of the six games. I'm going to eliminate Rondale Moore or A.J. Green because they'll never be the number one or number two option. So it comes down to Ertz or Hollywood Brown. I'm going to go with Hollywood Brown.
I was actually going to say Ertz for a similar reason, though. I eliminated the other two for the same reason. But once Hopkins comes back in week seven, I think that will somewhat impact the receiver touches. And therefore, Hollywood Browns could go down. I'm not saying dramatically, but I think they could go down a bit. Zach Ertz is a constant. He's going to hopefully be playing the whole entire season, and no tight end shifts will change that. So I'll pick Ertz.
All right.
Well, we knew Hollywood Brown was fast, but I don't know if he's this fast. He's running away from the competition. 71.8% say it's Hollywood. 19.7% say Ertz. The other two, very low, but below 10%.
I got to ask you guys, did any of you guys, and you can vote on that in the Twitter page. Page Burns and Gamble. Did any of you guys see the video of Nick Chubb squatting 610 pounds?
Yeah.
The bar was just
bending. I felt
what
bad for
wrong
that,
with that bar.
It can't be a normal bar.
It has to be one of those, oh my God, there's so much weight, we can't put a normal bar, it's going to snap it.
I've never seen anything like that.
You haven't squatted that much before?
No. I can't squat half that much.
It looked like the bar was all padded. You know how sometimes it's just padded where your shoulders are? It looked like the whole bar was like
that. Is it not the craziest freaking video, watching this guy squat 600? And you're looking at this bar, and it looks like it's rubber.
You know what's crazy is that by this time next year, somebody's going to squat 10 pounds more. And the year after that, somebody's going to squat 10 pounds more. And it's going to keep going and keep going up.
I just want to know what kind of freaking bar that is. What kind of bar you used to put 600 pounds on that bit? I mean, I thought the whole bar was going to drop the weights off of it.
Here's my takeaway.
It's a crazy, crazy video.
Here's my takeaway. I'm not standing in front of Nick Chubb if he's ready to run.
That's probably smart.
I'm not standing anywhere near that dude if he's ready to run.
You'll make a business decision?
Yeah.
And just let him go?
Absolutely a business decision.
Maybe he's been snapping bars lately.
The Nets asking price for Kevin Durant, is it so high that nobody can afford to pay it? There's a story about the Toronto Raptors being unable to pay up for the Nets' exorbitant asking price for Kevin Durant. Part of that could be is they're unwilling to move Scottie Barnes in a deal. Like, if you don't want to move Scottie Barnes, like, you know, I don't know what you're going to do to get Kevin Durant. Look, the Nets are trying to get a home run for Kevin Durant. They're trying to get a home run. They botched the James Harden trade. They gave the Rockets their draft for the next few years. And so they're trying to really make sure they make a great trade. They also have no incentive to lose because their picks do not go to them. They go to Houston. So their incentive with, you know, Simmons and Kyrie is to try to get some players back that can allow them to be competitive and win. They certainly don't want to give up a top five pick to the Rockets. That'll come back to haunt them. So they want to win enough games to kind of, you know, not look so bad, but also stay competitive and give themselves a chance to win. So, but there's a lot of reports that the Nets asking price is just too high, and that's why a deal at this point has not been done.
Well, originally, I think I read it in Sports Illustrated, and Gambo, maybe you've reported something similar, but I originally heard they wanted multiple all-stars and a bunch of draft picks. And for most teams that even have multiple all-stars,
caliber players,
right? I think that's probably more
likely. That, you know, there's only so many all-stars, and they're not all-star caliber players.
Even talking caliber, how many teams really have that? And if you did, why would you give that up? Why would Kevin want to stay? You know, like the Suns have how many all-star caliber players? I'd say probably four: Booker, Paul, Ayton, Mikal.
Okay.
I think that's probably about right.
Yeah.
Maybe Cam Johnson could make an all-star team here or there. So if you give away two, what is the purpose of him, of Durant wanting to stay?
Because if you gave away Cam and Mikhail, he'd still be playing with Booker, Paul, and Ayton.
But are those
That'd be the best four player. That would be, nobody would have a better starting four than the Suns.
And that's the obvious, like everyone would be okay with that. Obviously, no one wants Booker going anywhere. No one wants Paul going anywhere.
And they're not.
And they're not. But is that enough to lure the Nets into the conversation? I don't know that it is.
Listen, I was told today, and I'm gonna get back to my note. I was told today that the Boston Celtics are a real contender. They're a real contender. That Jaylen Brown would be the best player that could be in the deal. But the problem is that they really don't want to trade. The Nets really don't want to trade with Boston. They really don't want to, you know, empower Boston to be better. Now, I'm a big believer, make the best deal you can. But there's something about making a trade with the Celtics and giving them Kevin Durant for the next 4 years to team with Jason Tatum that they seem somewhat reluctant to do. But I am hearing that the Celtics are a real contender for KD. Look, I think the Suns are right there. I think the Suns still have a really good chance to get him. But I am hearing that the Celtics are a real contender because they do seem willing to add Jaylen Brown into a package to get Kevin Durant. And I know for a fact that Jason Tatum had FaceTimed Durant early in this process to talk about teaming up together.
Oh, that's interesting. I was thinking Brooklyn would be a little bit reticent to do a deal with Boston just because look at the deal that they did before. The KG Paul Pierce deal did not go well for Brooklyn, so that plays a role. They're certainly rivals, especially in that conference. I think that plays a role. A lot of teams in any sport don't want to make deals with guys that are in their own division because then you might be on the receiving end of Kevin Durant three-pointers at the buzzer for the next 4 years, and they don't want that either.
Yeah, if you could get a trade that's really close in value or equal in value, look at a trade and you say, okay, I got two trade options and they're both really good and we like them both, you would not trade him to Boston, you trade him to somewhere else. Now, if there's a big difference, then you got no choice. Like, if there's a big difference, hey, you could get Jaylen Brown from the Celtics, but you can get OG Anunoby from Toronto. Okay, well, I'm not going to do that deal. I'm going to get Jaylen Brown. Even though I have to deal with the Celtics, the much better player. So if, with all things being equal, you'll try not to trade him to the Celtics. But if things aren't equal, you still got to make the best trade for you. So I do think, well, I still think that the Suns are right there and they'll continue to work at this. I know they're not out of it. They haven't stopped trying to get him. I do, in the back of my mind, I am looking at Boston as a potential threat to the Suns and their ability to get Kevin Durant.
Well, and your original question was, is the price too high? I mean, I look around the league and Minnesota, they jumped the gun with this Rudy Gobert thing, completely resetting the market. You get what is essentially five first round picks, four picks and a guy they just took in the first round. So let's call it five first round picks and some dudes for a good center. Don't get me wrong, Rudy Gobert is a great defensive player, but he's not Kevin Durant. So Brooklyn looks at that and says, well, we cannot allow ourselves to get less than Minnesota got, or that Minnesota gave up to get Rudy. We have to get that deal plus some.
And
that's five first round picks and some players.
Part of that is not just because Kevin Durant is an elite player, but because Kevin Durant has 4 years left on his contract, which is extremely valuable to a team. You're not trying to, you don't have a guy that's got a year left and can leave in free agency if he's not happy. So you've got control of Kevin Durant for 4 years. So not only the fact that he's an elite player, and I still think the best one-on-one player in the league, but the 4 years left on the contract is very valuable if you're trading for Kevin Durant, knowing that you've got him for the next four seasons.
I think, so the big two players that are quote-unquote available, Kevin Durant, they're talking about, and then Donovan Mitchell, too, in Utah plays a role in all of this because Utah already moved Gobert for a fortune, and they believe Donovan Mitchell is the better player. So if they want to move Donovan Mitchell, that also could shoot up the market for Kevin Durant, the asking price. Because what if the Knicks or some multi-team trade for Donovan Mitchell to get him out of town results in six first-round picks? Now you've got another precedent that you have to break if you're Brooklyn.
Yeah, listen, the Knicks liked him. I'm even going back to one of my tweets from the 2017 draft. Read that.
This is from at Gambo987. One of the players the Knicks really like is Donovan Mitchell, shooting guard, Louisville.
They liked him for so long. They have liked him for so... The Knicks have liked Donovan Mitchell from, you know, back in the draft.
Well, so, he's a local kid, isn't he? Or his dad works for the Mets or something?
Yep. So he'd be going back home. So I think there's a way, and I talked about this earlier, and we'll talk about the Kevin Durant to the Sun stuff and how that could work out with the possible four-team trade. But I do think that the Nets, that, you know, the key really is that the Nets asking price is extremely high, and it probably should be. I mean, it probably should be. Kevin Durant may put a team over the top, like the Suns. There's a price to pay for being put over the top. Like, there's a price. You want me to help you win a championship? You got to pay for that. I'm just going to give it to you. I'm not going to hand it to you. I want something back in return. If you're going to be having a parade in Phoenix or a parade in Boston or Miami, wherever you may end up, or Toronto, like, there's a price to pay. I don't think if Toronto's not willing to put Barnes in the deal, they're done. I don't think if Miami puts Tyler Hero in the deal, maybe, but I still don't. I still think it's I think it comes down to the Celtics and the Suns. I think more than anybody else, I think the Suns and the Celtics have the two best chances of getting Kevin Durant.
Who's the more appealing player to Brooklyn? Jaylen Brown or Mikal Bridges?
Jaylen Brown. I don't even think it's close, to be honest with you. I don't even think it's close.
That's Jaylen what Brown's, should worry you if Jaylen you're a Suns fan.
Yeah, but that's why we've talked about how many other teams can you get involved to sweeten the pot and make things, you know, better and make things work. So, you know, I think that I don't think anybody wants to give the Nets four first-round draft picks and two of their better players. I think they're only able to take one. Like, you can't have both. Take the picks or take the players. But the Nets seem very insistent right now on, we'll wait this out until somebody wants to give us both.
Well, and there's plenty of reasons for them to not do a deal. Because, A, we have you under contract for 4 years. We don't have to move you. We'd like to have you back. You're the one who asked, not us. And then the other one in my mind is the James Harden deal and how that blew up in their face. And you gave up a lot to get James Harden. Then you shipped him right back out. And so you look back on that and you're like, we don't want to make that mistake a second time with another superstar.
Yeah, then that's why the Nets in Boston, it's just like, man, they really don't want to have to deal with them. They don't want to trade with Boston. If they could get a good trade somewhere else that's very equal in value, they don't want to have to trade with them. All right, the Arizona Coyotes, real active in the draft and free agency. Really like some of the things they've done. Their GM, Bill Armstrong, he's going to join us next on 98.7 FM, Arizona Sports Station.
98.7 FM, Arizona Sports Station. Burns and Gambo.
All right, the Arizona Coyotes, real active in the NHL draft. 3 first-round picks, 2 second-round picks, and obviously in free agency. I was on vacation for the last couple of weeks, so I didn't get a chance to really partake in all the festivities. So I wanted to catch up with Bill Armstrong today so I could enjoy the day and the moment for the Arizona Coyotes. So the general manager of the Coyotes, Bill Armstrong, joins us on the program. Bill, how are you, my friend?
I'm doing great. How are you guys doing?
I'm excited. You know, looking at everything that you did in the draft, you did not have to give up any of your kids in all the picks that you acquired. So I think that's a good thing for the Armstrong family.
Yeah. It was great. You know, obviously you're just wondering, you know, who's going to be left on the board when you're picking, obviously. And I think we did a good job of understanding the draft and where everybody was going to go in the draft and kind of getting into some regions to getting some kids we liked. And so it was really exciting. And, you know, we tried to put our picks to work and then move up in the draft, and we're able to do that.
Yeah, let me get your assessment. When you look at Logan Cooley and Connor Geeky, you look at center, right? You got to be strong up the middle. I love that you took two centers in the top 11 picks, and then you add the defenseman Maverick Lamoureux to the pro, 3 first round picks, then Duda and Lutz in the second round. Just give me your thoughts. When the second round was over, how happy were you with the 5 players that you drafted?
Oh, we're ecstatic. Just to be able to get 2 centers right off the hop. And you know, Logan Cooley is something that we don't have inside our organization.
Nope.
He's dynamic. He can push the pace. You know, he's somebody that's got an engine on him. He just doesn't stop. And to be able to kind of trade up and get to Geeky, you know, he's pushing 6'4". He's a big physical centerman. He's got skill. He's got sense. He's still raw. He's got a bit to grow into his body and add some strength. But just to get those 2 guys out of the hopper was great. And then Lamoureux for us is just a big man. He kind of reminds me almost of Pareko. He's a smooth skater for a big man. He can hammer guys. He can fight. He can play an active physical role. He's a monster. He'll take some time to grow into his body, but someone we're excited. And then we started off the second round, and we got Duda. And Duda's an exciting. He's kind of like a Letang type player. He's just a water bug on that ice, and he's all over making plays, and he's pushing the offense. And just really exciting to get Lutz also, a young German kid that's got the ability to play a two-way game and has some skill and some speed. So to walk out with that, we were really excited. And, it's frightening when you're going to the draft because you're wondering if your guys are going to be there, but we were able to walk out with our guys. So
yeah, let's not forget Dylan Gunther last year and Josh Doan, big parts of the future of the organization, very likely. I mean, when you start to put all this young talent together, I mean, we're going to look at the Coyotes, we're going to say, boy, they've got some of the best young talent in the NHL.
If you think about it, within a year's time, we've added Logan Cooley, Gunther, Moser, McBain, Vejmalko, Lamoureux, Geeky, Doan, Fedotov, Kolnachuk, Nate Smith, Anson Thornton, Connor Timmins, and Kelman, just to end up playing for the Slovak team. So, for us, that's a lot of guys on the board in a short period of time to kind of replenish the Coyotes, and we're just getting started with that, and we still got a ton of picks to go.
Talking with Bill Armstrong, general manager of the Arizona Coyotes. Bill, we know that you guys are stocking up on young talent like you were talking about there, but can you speak to when you're wheeling and dealing, making a lot of picks, a lot of moves, can you speak to the importance of bringing in veterans into that mix as well? Because I think a rebuild, Gambo and I have been talking about this a lot lately, it's not just bringing in young, fresh faces, it's also guys who can teach them the ropes and things like that.
Well, you're 100% right on that. Someone's got to be in that dressing room and pushing our process. And we talk about process, we're at the stages of the rebuild. We get out of it. We've got to be the hardest working team with talented players. And that's a lot to do with what you're talking about, of having those guys to bring in the good veterans to push that process that we want through our coaching staff and making sure that we're driving that all the time. Even though we're going through the rebuild, we still have to be the hardest working hockey team in the NHL, and we added some physical presence to give us some beef with Brown, obviously Kazzy, and then last year we had Richie, and we signed O'Brien back, along with Krause. So we've got a big physical team coming into a small barn in ASU. We're excited about that.
Yeah, I was excited about Kazzy, and then in that big trade, obviously got a book. I was excited about him. I mean, he's got.
Yeah.
I mean, this is a guy who's got 600 plus regular season games. He's probably got 50 playoff games under his belt. I mean, he's been in big games before. I mean, he's played on a line with Connor McDavid, for goodness sakes. I think that's a sneaky good trade by you that's really not getting noticed. Tell me what you liked about adding him to your team.
Well, he's someone that can go up. He's played on the first line, second line, third line, fourth line. He can have a lot of different roles with us. He gives us some beef. He gives us some physical play. He's a tough player. He'll stick up and protect his teammates. And at the same time, he can actually play the game. So for us, it's someone that just gives us that gritty type of style hockey that we need to play in the desert, that cactus style, game where we're just constantly playing physical and we're in people's faces. And for us, he's going to be a great add into the our new style of game that we're trying to play.
I know he's got some familiarity with Lawson Krause. You envision them maybe playing together on a line?
Yeah, I know just adding Richie last year and McBain down the middle, and now adding Kassian and also Krause in there and adding Brown in the backside, we've got a lot bigger in a short period of time, and we've tried to add some size to the Coyotes, not only in the draft but also through free agency.
Yeah, and I had to ask you about that because I want you guys to be a team that's going to be tough to play. It's going to be teams are going to come in and think they're going to walk on you, and they're going to walk out with some bruises. It's going to be a hard physical game. It's going to be hard to beat the Coyotes. And last year, I mean, there were some tremendous moments last year, especially the two wins against the Avalanche, going there and ending their big win streak. I thought that was huge. But it was definitely an element of physical play that I liked about the team last year. And I just see you guys just getting bigger and stronger and more physical.
Yeah, when you come watch the Yotes, you know, you're going to see a great brand of hockey that you're going to walk out. So that team works. They're physical. They stick up for each other. They play hard from the start of the game to the end of the game. And you saw that in the last, you know, point of the season. We didn't have any players. We traded everybody away. We were still winning games because I felt our coach did an amazing job of pushing the culture and pushing the hard work and the grit. And, you know, if they're gonna walk out, you know, if they beat us, they're going to walk out with some bruises and some scars. And I think when we have that type of mentality, we go in there and steal games off teams that aren't ready. So I thought our coaches did a tremendous job last year, just pushing that pace. And you know, at the end of the year, you could see it. We had no give in our game.
Coyotes general manager Bill Armstrong on the Burns and Gambo show. I think I heard you say, Bill, a small barn at ASU, I think is how you put it. Have you found that to be any sort of hindrance or in free agency in particular, bringing in other players? Is that something that they want to avoid, or do they like the intimate setting idea of being an Arizona Coyote?
Well, it's something different. It's different than the entire NHL offers. You're going to walk into an arena that seats 5,000, which, you know, that doesn't happen in the NHL. So it's exciting to see that, you know, it's something different. And I think, you know, we grew up in Canada playing in these small arenas that were packed, where people are hanging off the rafters to see a play. And it just provides a setting that's intense. And it's just, you know, you're literally 15 rows from the ice and it's on top of you. And when that happens, it's a special feeling. So for us in ASU, we're embracing that, and I think we're embracing that with our identity of our team and how big, strong, and tough we're going to be, and the game that we're going to play. Fans are going to love it in that building.
Yeah, I loved the comments. You know, I told you I was excited about the Cassian move because I think he could really, really help a lot of the young players. But you know, his comments, I didn't know when, I didn't know where, but when I found out it was Arizona, I was really happy. Honestly, not only was I happy, but my wife was happy. My family members were happy. Our friends were happy, too. I mean, this guy's sky high to be playing for the Coyotes right now after being in the Western Conference Finals.
Yeah, well, listen, that is the truth. I think the one advantage we have in Arizona is every wife wants to come to Arizona. And last I checked, they have a big influence in the household, because when my wife's not happy, nobody's happy. The dog's not happy. Nobody's happy in that house. So the wives rule, and that's the truth, and they have a big influence, and they love Arizona. And that's a piece that not only, you know, that we provide, but it's just a beautiful place to live and great people, and you see people that, you know, embrace it and they want to come here, and those are the players that we want. We want the people that want to be in Arizona.
All right. I used to bounce Matthew Tkachuk off my knee when he was a little kid. I did. Now, Keith would come over to the house, and I used to tell him, go tell your daddy the Red Sox suck. I mean, so I used to, Matthew Tkachuk used to be at my house, and I used to sit on my knee. And I'm not going to ask you directly about him, but how soon do you think you could put this organization in a position to, when a player like that becomes available and he's going to get traded, he wants out, that you can now make a play for how far away? A year away? 2 years away? Because I know you're excited about the draft picks, and you did a great job with St. Louis, especially with the second rounders. But at some point, right? I mean, after you've acquired all these assets and young talent, you're going to want to make a move for a stud. How far away are you from being able to make a move for a player like that?
First of all, it's a really great question, because we get asked that a lot. Like, when is that time where you go? And, you know, we've done a lot of research, and, you know, from back from my days when we were trying to, you know, obviously rebuild St. Louis, we did a lot of studies on it. And to be honest with you, when you start a rebuild, it's 5 to 8 years before you make the playoffs. That's the truth of it. And to win a championship is even more scary. There's one team, it was Pittsburgh, that when they started the rebuild to the time they raised it over their heads, it was 8 years. But more than likely, if you're looking at the St. Louis Blues and you're looking at Washington or Tampa, it's 11 to 14 years out by the time you start the rebuild. So it takes a large process. And listen, you don't want to rush it and force it, because that's what happened here last time, and you start adding people and you're not ready and it just doesn't go anywhere. So you have to be patient with it. But there's going to come a time and point where we use our picks and we're going to flip it, you know, whether that's 3 years or 5 years down the road. We'll see how well the process prospects do and how they develop and where we're at that point. But there is a point with all our picks we can go buy. I think the Rockets did it with James Harden there. They went and bought a player back in the day with all their assets. And you know, if that player's sitting out there, the right player, we'll go do that at the right time. But, you know, you definitely don't want to force it and try and do it too early, because it does take some time, and that's what history tells you.
What a great answer. That is an absolutely great answer. I have not heard that before. I'm fascinated by that. Bill, I appreciate it. I apologize for going on vacation and getting away for a little bit, because I would have loved to have been there and been a part of everything, yeah. But we only got a couple of weeks to take vacation in the summer, so I took it at the wrong time this year. But definitely wanted to get you on and catch up with you and congratulate you on the success in the draft and in free agency.
Oh, thanks very much, guys, for having me. Really appreciate it. And go Yotes.
All right, Bill, we appreciate it. That's Bill Armstrong, the general manager of your Arizona Coyotes. Fascinating, the timeline, how long, you know, it does take before you can, you know, on a rebuild to turn around into a contender. All right, Kevin Durant, what is the latest? Is he on the move? Is he staying with the Nets? We'll talk about some options next on 98.7 FM, Arizona Sports Station.